All right, let's jump in. Good to see you all again. Sorry it's not as warm as it could and should be in this room. We'll warm up to the fire of Torah, as they describe it in the Talmud, okay? So we get into it, we'll study with a certain intensity. Hopefully, we'll warm ourselves up. Okay, so today's class is actually primarily based around an idea that Rabbi Chanoch Waxman, he is a teacher in Gush Etzion, and he makes the observations which I'm going to be sharing with you today, and I'll build on it a little bit, but I really want to, the initial observations are really his, and I want to give credit where credit is due. So what we're going to do today is look at the beginning of our Torah portion, which is Parshas Vayetze, and we're going to look at the end of our Torah portion. And we're going to be using, today we're going to be focused, we're going to learn a little bit about some techniques that are used in looking for themes in the Torah. And so there's a concept that you find not just in the Torah, but you find this in all of literature. There's something called a leitmotif, which is essentially a fancy way of saying a word that gets repeated over and over and over again, which would seem to indicate that it is a major theme in that section. If there is one term that is used continuously in a section, then you have to assume that it's not just being repeated because someone just was thinking a lot about that word, but it's trying to drill a certain point in when it says that word over and over again. So that's one thing we're going to be focusing on today. In the two sections we're going to see in terms of what are the words that are being used. The other technique we want to be thinking about is bookends. And what I mean by bookends is that sometimes you have the beginning of something and you have the end of something. And then there's something in between. So this week's Torah portion is a very long one. And the Torah portion begins with Yaakov. If you grab the source, the pieces of paper that are on the page, there you go. If the beginning of the Parsha begins with Yaakov traveling away from the land of Israel and making his way to a place called Haran, where he goes and he finds a wife and he marries more than one, he ends up marrying four wives, and he has he has 11 sons who become the developments of the tribes, and there's Dinah. Okay, it spans decades. The Torah portion spans decades, but the concluding part of the Torah portion has Yaakov traveling from Haran back to the land of Israel. Okay, so the bookends of the Torah portion are transition points. The beginning of the Parsha is Yaakov leaving Israel and enter and going into this place called Haran. And the end of the Torah portion has Yaakov leaving Haran and going back to the land of Israel. In between, he develops an entire family. But as we'll see, there is a unique and significant amount of parallel between the beginning and the end of the Torah portion, which presumably is trying to catch our attention, to draw our attention to the similarities, and we'll see the differences as well. And through, by focusing on the beginning and the end, I think it'll shed a lot of light into what takes place in the middle. Okay, you're with me? So it's a lot of we have a big agenda today. The reason I photocopy these papers as opposed to giving you the Chumash today is because, as you'll see, there are red highlights. And I really wanted you to think about those words. There's an English translation which is underneath, but I'll be reading it in Hebrew and translating it, so you could just follow in the English. The value of following in the Hebrew is that you will see a little bit more of the items that I want to highlight when we see this passage. So I'm going to read relatively quickly, but because we want to see two separate sections today. So let's jump in. We're going to begin, it's really the beginning of the Torah portion, and that is chapter 28, okay? Chapter 28, and let's see what it says in the beginning of the Torah portion. This is Yaakov, again, when he is on the run, he is leaving because Esav, his brother, what we spoke about last week, Esav, his brother, is quite unhappy with him, and so he's leaving Israel, he's leaving his family to go to Haran. It's chapter 28, verse 1. So Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Sheva, Vayelech Harana. Yaakov leaves Be'er Sheva, that's where he was living, and he goes to Haran, that's the city that he is going to meet his future wives. Vayifka Bamakom, and he encounters the place. Lifgoa, to encounter, doesn't mean he went there intentionally. It seems like he almost literally, the way to translate this is like he bumped into this place. And what's going to take place in this place is that he's going to have this very famous prophetic dream where he sees that ladder with the angels. But it's interesting that the Torah describes his coming to that place not as a deliberate coming, a deliberate arrival, but rather it's a focus of, it's almost like it's happenstance. But you've got, it's like he bumped into it. Okay, we'll have to come back to why that's so significant. So Vayifka b'makom v'yalen sham, and he encounters this place and he rests there, kiva shemesh, because the sun had set. Vayikach me'avne hamakom, he takes from the stones of that place, Vayasem ra'ashosav, and he places them by his head. Vayishka v'makamahu, and he sleeps in that place. Right? This is a somewhat of a famous narrative where Yaakov comes to this place. We're told that this is the future place of the temple, and he wants to sleep there that night. He grabs a couple of stones, he places them around him, and he goes to sleep. Vayachalom, verse 12, or Yubez. Vayachalom, and he has a dream. Okay, and it's a famous dream. We're not going to spend too much time analyzing the dream. But v'hinei sulam mutzav arza, there is a ladder which is resting on the ground. V'rosho, and its top, magia hashamayma, reaches the heavens. V'hinei malachei elokim olim v'yordim bo, and the angels of God are going up and down that ladder, right? A very famous vision. What does the vision represent? There are numerous interpretations. Just share with you some of them. Some of them understand this to be the angels that are going up and going down, basically seem to be a reference to this, the angels that are going there, some understand to be a reference to the different nations which will subjugate the Jewish people. And Yaakov, according to the Midrashic read, sees this ladder which is so high, it goes to the heavens. Remember, we saw that when we talked about the Tower of Babel. Reaching the heavens is another way of saying you can't even see the top. It's like endless. And Yaakov sees all these nations which are going up and going up. They're basically attacking the Jews. They're enslaving the Jews. They're subjugating the Jews. And Yaakov is overwhelmed. He says, are my children never going to live comfortably? Right? And the next verse has God coming in and God assuring him, saying, no. I got you. I'll take care of you. I'll look over you. And despite the fact that there will be many travails, there will be many challenges, God is comforting Yaakov in this dream, which he has again in the dark, dark night, representing the exile, telling him, don't worry, even though you see in this vision these angels representing the enemy nations, God says, I am standing over you. I will watch over your children, and they will survive. That's one read of this dream. Alternatively, some understand the angels going up and going down as the ups and downs that we go through in our own lives, that God is conveying to Yaakov at this moment as he is leaving the land of Israel. You know, I was asked as I walked in, Estelle said, is it a mitzvah to live in the land of Israel? And the answer was given, yes, it is. Jenny said, yes, it is. And according to most opinions, it is a mitzvah to live in Israel. So here he is going down. He is going away from where he was. He is forced to flee from a place which is a place full of mitzvos, from being with his family and being able to fulfill the mitzvos of kibud av aim, of honoring your parents. And this seems to be a terrible, terrible decline. But the vision, and this is the way the Ran understands the vision, is the angels are going up and down, up and down. And what he's being taught over here is that this is the way of life. The way of life is that you never go consistently up. Anyone who thinks they're going consistently up is actually dreaming much more so than Yaakov. The real reality is that in life we go up and we go down. We have to embrace that. We have to recognize there are times, you know, so many people, it's so interesting. I've lost track of how many conversations I've had with people who tell me that over COVID, they've lost interest in being in a shul setting. Shul doesn't talk to them anymore. Okay, and we can—it's not the time and place. We could talk about theories about why and how tired our brains are and how that impacts our connections to spirituality or connections to God. There's a lot to talk about. But I think a much more global point—forget COVID—is the recognition that there are times in our life where we feel more charged, or more on, and more spiritually connected, and there are times when we just don't. And we could ignore that. We could fight that. Right? We could ignore it. That's one option. We could fight that. That's another option. Or we could embrace that and say, okay, right now, I'm not feeling so spiritually on. Right now, I don't feel so close to Hashem. Okay. Right? And I recognize that there's an ebb and flow. Like in all relationships, sometimes you feel much more connected and sometimes it diminishes a little, but that doesn't mean it's over. It doesn't mean I throw it all away. It means I have to kind of ride the waves. You know, I've never surfed, but that's what surfing is, right? You ride the waves. Sometimes the waves go high, sometimes they go low. And to recognize there's a natural ebb and flow, not just to our emotional well-being, to our spiritual well-being as well. That, according to some, is the vision of the ladder. Okay, I've officially gone on a terribly long tangent because that's not what we're focusing on today. So let's just quickly summarize. What we did see is Yaakov is leaving Eretz Yisrael. He is going outside of Israel to Haran. He goes to, he encounters the place, Vayifka. It's an encounter that is less than deliberate. Vayifka, again, he bumps into this holy place. It's not something which he walks into deliberately. He bumps into it. He has a dream in his sleep and he sees angels in his dream. Okay? And God, in the rest, we're not going to read the whole section over here. God assures him, don't worry, I'll watch over you. Fine. Let's now skip a couple of psukim. We're going to go to the bottom. If you're following on the source sheet over here, we're going to go to the bottom of the page. If you're following in a chumash, we're in chapter 29, verse 4. This is toward the bottom of the page. You see the Vayomer Lehem Yaakov. If you're following on the English, you could turn the page already. It's in the English, it's on the other page. And here we have Yaakov now. He got up from the dream and he goes to Haran and he comes. This is the famous first meeting between Jacob and Rachel. They meet at, where do they meet? Where do all Jewish biblical people meet their spouses? At the well, right? Okay, why? There's obviously, it's not a coincidence, but we don't have time to analyze that now, but there are so many, right, encounters by the well, right? Yitzchak, he's not, through his proxy, meets his wife by the well. Yaakov meets Rachel by the well. Who else? Moshe meets Tzipporah and her sisters by the well, right? There's something going on over there, right? Be'er Miriam, we know that Miriam is associated with the well. There seems to be something about femininity and in general and marriages in particular that revolve around the well of water and food for thought as to why that is the case. We're not going to get into that today. But here, let's go into this section. And if you're following in the Hebrew, you'll notice I highlighted one word over and over again, and that is the word brother. Okay, achai or achi, my brother, okay? Let's see how many times that word is highlighted in this section, okay? Verse 4, so again, chapter 29, verse 4. So this Yaakov comes to the well, and he sees a bunch of shepherds. Vayomer lehem Yaakov, and Yaakov says to the shepherds, achai, my brothers, me'ayin atem, where are you from? Vayomru mecharan anachnu, so they say, we're from Haran. Right, you have to keep in mind, he's not following Waze on his phone, and he doesn't have a GPS in his car, and there are no signs, because it's the ancient world. And so he comes to a well, and he has no idea where he is. He's just traveling, right? There's no map even, right? And so he sees a bunch of people, and says, hey, where are you from? What city are we next to? And they say, we're from Haran. Vayomer lahem, he says, oh, amazing. This is where I'm heading. He says to them, Hayadatim es Lavan ben Nachor, do you know Lavan, Laban? Do you know who he is? Vayomeru yadana, we know who he is. Verse 6, Pasuk Vav, Vayomer lahem hashalom lo, and he says to them, is everything okay with him? Vayomer shalom, things are good. Vine Rachel bito by matzon, Rachel, his daughter, is on her way with the sheep. Okay, so she was a shepherdess. She was going to be bearing the sheep to the well. Vayomer, verse 7, he says, Hein od ayom gadol, he says, hey, wait, it's a little strange that it's still early in the day. Lo eis he'asef ha-mikneh. It is not the time for the sheep to gather. Apparently, they would gather the sheep at the end of the day, not in the middle of the day. Hashku atzonu l'churu'u. So it's interesting what Yaakov is doing over here. He says, go water, get your sheep to be, you know, let them drink and go. Like, what are you doing over here, right? So it's interesting that he's kind of rebuking them, it sounds like, right? You see a little bit of Yaakov's integrity over here. It's like a very strange little dialogue. But he sees these shepherds who are gathered. He doesn't know them for Adam. He doesn't know them at all. But he says, hey, you're shepherds. You're being paid to go graze with your sheep. And the day's not over. Like, what are you doing over here? You should go, right? Which is, again, fascinating. But you know, we wouldn't think to do such a thing. But again, it speaks a little bit to Yaakov's integrity that he feels the need to give them some direction. Vayomra, and they said, Lo nuchal, we can't. Ad asher ya'asvu kol adar, until all the different flock, all the different shepherds with their sheep gather. V'galu asa evan me'alpia be'er, and so that we're able to roll this large stone from the well. Vishkinu atzon, and then we're able to give water to our sheep. And what it seems like there's a primitive alarm system. What happened in the ancient world is that in order to ensure that no one is taking advantage of the wells of water, again, and certainly in regions where water was scarce, so what they would do is they would place a tremendous rock over the water so that no one comes on their own and takes it off and starts taking as much water as they want. They built it in a way, they placed this tremendous rock on in a way that ensures that numerous groups have to come together, and that creates a certain sense of accountability to ensure that no one's going to abuse the wells of water that are here. Okay, which is interesting. It certainly speaks to the character of the people there, that they weren't as trusting. You know, one of the things that we find from the forefathers, if you recall, we spoke about this a little bit earlier, is Avram and Yitzchak both go out of their way to dig wells so that everyone could just partake, right? They were trying to be generous with their wells, and here you find a country or a place which is a little bit more stingy around their water and a little bit less trusting. Okay, fine. Odenu midaber imam, verse 10 or 9, while he was talking to them, v'rachel ba'am matzona shelavia, and Rachel herself, Rachel, comes with the sheep, ki roahi, because she was a shepherdess. Verse Yud, v'yikasha ra es Rachel, Yaakov es Rachel, when Yaakov saw Rachel, bas Lavan, the daughter of Lavan, achi imo, the brother of his mother. Okay, this is the second time we find the word achi, brother, in this section. Veso Lavan, and the sheep of Lavan, Achi Imo, who's the brother of his mother. Okay, so already you see quite clearly there's a certain repetitiveness going on. It just said Lavan half a sentence before, and we know Lavan is his uncle. It's his mother's brother. Okay, and now repeats it. Lavan, Achi Imo, the brother of his mother. So clearly already we're seeing there's a certain repetitiveness of this word Achi, Achi, brother, brother. Vayigash Yaakov, Yaakov comes forward. Vayagel es ha'aven, aven me'alpia be'er. And he on his own, quite clearly a very strong individual. Normally this would take a whole bunch of men. He does it on his own. He takes the stone and rolls it off on his own. Vayashk es tzon Lavan Achi Imo, and we find him rather chivalrous over here. He, you know, shows his immense strength. He takes the stone off by himself, and then even though Rachel is the shepherdess, he himself goes and gives to the sheep of his uncle on his own. Okay, but again, we just said Lavan Achi Imo. We're up to time number 4 in this section, right? So Lavan Achi Achi Achi, and there's this idea of brotherhood. And over here specifically, it's being mentioned in the context of Lavan. Okay, Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel. Yaakov kissed Rachel. Okay, some expression of endearment. Vayisa es kolo vayeft, and he cried. Why is he crying over here? There are many midrashic readings. The simplest understanding is that he hasn't been seen any family. He's been on the run from Esau for quite some time, and finally he sees family. Even though he doesn't know her personally, you could imagine, as some do, some conjecture, that his niece has some resemblance to whom? To his mother, who he was very close with. We know he was very close to his mother, Rivka. And he's been on the run all alone for all this time, and now he sees someone who has a resemblance of his mother, who is close to him, he's related to him. He finally sees family. Could imagine the reunion over here was very moving, even though he didn't really have a prior relationship with her. It was something which was very moving to him. Vayaged Yaakov l'Rachel, and Yaakov tells Rachel, ki achi aviyahu, that he is what? That he is the brother of her father. Now, is he the brother of her father? No, that's not really accurate. He is the nephew of his father, right? But it's a term of closeness, right? You say, you're my brother, means we're related. But it's interesting, in this verse, he calls himself a brother to Lavan, okay? V'chi ven Rivka hu, and he is... And Vechiven Rivka, who then he is the son of Rivka, Vataretz Vatagilavia, and she ran and told her father. Okay, so this is interesting. What do we know about Lavan? What do we know on our own about Lavan? I mean, we're not going to really read through the section. A little character sketch.
Deceitful.
They're very deceitful, right? He's an extremely deceitful person. We call him Lavan Arami. He's from the place called Aram, but the word Ramai also means a trickster, right? So Lavan is a very deceitful person. And over here we find Yaakov calling himself a brother to Lavan, right? That is presumably somewhat significant, right? There is something going on over here. The fact that he calls himself a brother to Lavan, and the commentators actually say that, you know, that the read into this a little bit, that he is, right? We know Yaakov has this very interesting relationship to truth, right? And but from one perspective, we could perhaps accuse him of being a little bit Lavan-like. Right? So these words, I am Lavan's brother, perhaps have a deeper connotation. He is also in some ways deceitful. We'll come back to that specific point. Let's keep on reading. Vayhi, verse 13. Vayhi chishmoa Lavan es shema Yaakov bein achoso. When Lavan heard the name of Yaakov, who is the son of his sister. Now over here, achoso means sister, but it's from the same roots in Hebrew. Ach and achot, they are both share that same, it's the same word. Ach means brotherhood, familial connection. So, I don't know, I lost track. How many times do we say the word achai? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We're up to number 6, okay? Up to number 6. Vayaretz lekraso, he ran to greet him. Vayechabek lo, he hugged him. Vaynashik lo, and he kissed him. The commentators say, you know, why is he hugging him and kissing him? So the Rashi says, famously, he says, this wasn't a kiss and a hug of endearment. Lavan had a good memory. And if you recall from last week, when Yitzchak's servant came to get a spouse for Yitzchak, he came with camels laden with gold and silver and jewels and all that. And Yaakov comes; he's on his own. All he has is just a stick, right? He's impoverished. And so Lavan's like, well, "Where's all the wealth?" Right? So he's hugging him, feeling around. He's kissing him. He's feeling in his mouth. You know, people store some jewels in their mouth. Where's the money, right? Lavan is not just deceitful. He's greedy. And we'll see his greed. We're not going to get into too deeply, but Lavan is a rather greedy individual as well. So this hug and kiss is not exactly that endearing. It's actually part and parcel with our vision of who Lavan is, okay? So he brings him to his house. Lavan is called Varma Ela, and he tells Lavan all the things that happened to him. Vayomer lo Lavan, and Lavan says to him, verse 14, Yudalad, Ach atzmi v'sariata, you are part of my flesh, my bones and flesh. Vayeshev imo chodeshem, he says, you can stay here, and he lets him live there for a month. Vayomer Lavan li Yaakov, and Lavan tells Yaakov, Hachi, achi ata, because you are my brother, vavati chinam, therefore you should work for free. He says, even though we're brothers, that doesn't mean you should work for me for free. Hagida li ma maskutecha, tell me what your cost is. Tell me how much I should be paying you. But once again, we find Lavan now describing Yaakov as his brother, right? Number 7. Okay, for 7 times in these few verses, we saw the word ach, achi, achot, ach, brotherhood, brotherhood, brotherhood. And specifically in relationship, Lavan and Yaakov are seen as brothers. There's that familial connection between them, okay? So let's just pause here for a second and just summarize. This is our opening of this week's Torah portion. It begins, once again, with Yaakov leaving Israel, encountering a holy place, but almost by happenstance, seeing angels, but in a dream, and then regarding his connection to Lavan, it's being described as a form of brotherhood. Okay? You with me? Let's now... Yes, go ahead. He lost one brother. Interesting.
And he had a kind of contentious relationship
Interesting.
With that brother. So are they trying to continue?
Interesting. So there is perhaps a surrogate brotherhood of sorts over here, like he's fulfilling his brotherhood need. That could be. Let's hold off on that thought. That's a very interesting thought. I'm going to share a different approach. If you want to go for those following in the source sheets, there's source sheets on the beam if you'd like. If you go to the bottom of that page, or the second page, now Vayugal Lavan b'yom ha'shlishi. Okay, it's verse 22. It's all the way at the end of the parsha. Now we're jumping all the way to the end of the parsha. Let me just grab a chumash, tell you which chapter it's in for those listening online. One second. Chapter 31. Thank you so much. Chapter 31. Okay, Perek Lamed Aleph, verse 22. Okay, so now we're all the way. So I'll give you a quick synopsis of what we missed. What we missed is Lavan messing around with Yaakov endlessly. First, he tells him you can marry Rachel, and he switches it with Leah, right? So then, fine. Then he has issues. Then he finally ends up marrying both Rachel and Leah. And then he marries their maidservants. And then they have children. And there's tension in the home between Rachel and her sister, and Rachel and her husband about the fact that she does not have children. And finally, she does have children. And then they have a bunch of children. And then what happens is that Yaakov tells Lavan, I want to leave. And Lavan is not so happy about him leaving because clearly Yaakov was an excellent shepherd. And as Lavan himself says, through you being here, my estate has expanded, you know, a hundredfold. You've been so good at what you do. And therefore, Yaakov tries to figure out a way to leave. And he comes up with different ways of structuring his pay. And each time it ends up working out in Yaakov's favor and causes Lavan to be quite upset. And what the Torah tells us that Lavan is actually really, really upset with Yaakov. And Lavan, who has sons, also are quite upset with Yaakov. And Yaakov, it seems like he starts to get scared that Lavan is going to do something rash and something violent and something perhaps lethal to him. And therefore, Yaakov decides that the only way to get out of this whole situation is to escape. Okay, so Yaakov takes his family. At this point, it's 11 children. He also has 11 sons, one daughter. He also amassed an incredible amount of wealth. And he starts and he runs away. Lavan is out far away one week. And Yaakov gathers all his stuff and starts to escape. Okay, 3 days after his escape is where we're going to pick up. Okay, Yaakov has escaped. And now 3 days later, as we'll see, Lavan gets wind of the fact that Yaakov is on the run. Okay, let's see what happens. So verse 22, again, chapter 31, Pasuk Chaf Beis, verse 22. Vayugal Lavan v'yom ha'shlishi ki varach Yaakov. And on the third day of Yaakov's escape, it was told to Lavan that Yaakov has run away. Verse 23. Vayikach es echav imo. And Lavan takes his brothers with him. Again, it's that word ach again. We'll have to count in this section, how often do we find that word ach again? Vayirdof acharav derech shivas yamim, and Lavan runs after him the travels of 7 days. Vayadbeik oso bahar hagilad, and he catches up to him in har hagilad. Vayavo elokim, and it seems like they are close to one another. The Lavan goes to sleep for the night. Again, back in the day, you don't travel during night. You only travel during the day. As it gets towards evening, they go to sleep. So Lavan is quite close to Yaakov, but he encamps for the night. And when he's in that night, he has a dream. Vayavo elokim el Lavan arami bechalom alayla, and God himself appears to Lavan in a dream. Vayomer lo, and he says to him, Hishamer lecha, be careful. Pendedaber im Yaakov im tov adra, don't say anything good or bad to Yaakov. Don't threaten him, even if you want to make it sound nice. Don't do anything. God is warning Lavan against harming Yaakov in any way, even verbally. Pasuk Chafei, verse 25. Are you able to follow, right? You're with me on the, it's on the English. We're on the third page. In the Hebrew, we're on the second page. Vayaseg Lavan es Yaakov, and Lavan catches up to Yaakov. Vayaakov taka es ahalo bahar, and Yaakov had his tent in the mountain. Vilavan taka es echav bahar hagilad, and Lavan was encamped with his brothers again, time number two, with his brothers in Har HaGilad. Okay, so once again, it's describing Lavan and his relationship to his brothers. Vayomer Lavan liYaakov, and Lavan says to Yaakov, Me'asisa, what did you do? Vatignov es levav, you stole my heart. Vatinaheg es benosai kishvuyos charev, and you treated my daughters like captives. Right? Basically saying that you stole my children from me, right? Why'd you leave in the middle of the night? Lama nechbesa livroch, why did you hide and run away? Vatignovosi, and you stole from me. Velo gatalin, you didn't tell me. Vashalechecha besimcha veshir betof vechinar, I would have sent you off with joy and with song and with musical instruments. Now, we, the reader, knows that this is cynical. Lavan was planning on harming Yaakov, right? So we, the reader, know that Lavan is just full of it. He's saying, I would have escorted you. I would have given you a whole party. Yeah, he probably would have popped a bullet in his head at the party or so. You know, okay, I'm being a little anachronistic. But right, he would have killed him, right? He wasn't really going to make a party for him. But this is Lavan. Lavan's full of, you know, full of lies, right? This is what he does. I would have made a whole party for you. What are you doing, right? Verse 28, you didn't give me an opportunity to kiss my children. Ati skalta aso, you acted foolishly. Verse 29, yesh el yadi lasosi mechem ra, says, I have the ability to do evil with you. Velohei avilkei avichem emesh amar lemar, however, your God said to me, hishamer lecha, be careful, midaber em Yaakov mitovad ra, warn me not to do anything to you, and therefore, says Lavan, I'm not going to harm you. Vata, verse 30, halocha lachta, you left, ki nichsof nichsafta leveis avicha, because you missed your father's household. Lama genavta es Elokai. Why did you steal Elohai? Why did you steal my idols? Okay, so what's going on over here? What's going on over here is that we're told, and we'll see in a moment, that Rachel, while they were leaving, Rachel did not only take her own possessions, but she decided she was going to steal the idols of her father. Why does she think that's a good idea? Well, she doesn't want her father to serve idols, but we don't have the time to unpack this right now. But Rachel feels it to be her duty, her responsibility, to remove the idols from her father's house. Now that she's leaving, she goes and she basically walks off with those idols. But she never told her husband Yaakov that she was doing this. Okay, so when Lavan catches up, he says, fine, I get it. You missed your father. Great. But why did you take my idols? Why did you do that? Vayan Yaakov, verse 31, Vayan Yaakov v'yomer Lavan, Yaakov responds to Lavan, he says, ki oresi, because I was scared. He's answering the first question. I was scared. Ki amarti pentigzol es benosecha me'emai. Yaakov over here is very blunt with Lavan. Lavan said, I would have made a party for you. And Yaakov says, no, you know why I didn't tell you? Because I was afraid if I would have told you I was leaving, you know what you would do? You would take my wives and take them captive. You would prevent me from taking them with me. Don't tell me you would make a party for me. The reason I didn't tell you is because I know you, and I know that you would have prevented me from taking my family with me. Imasher timtza, fine. That's his answer to the first question. But it's interesting over here, Yaakov is very straightforward with Lavan. He does not play Lavan's game. He does not act, you know, politically correct over here. He is very, very unabashed in his response, right? Normally when we are upset at someone, you know, unless we lose it, normally we try to say something in more of a, you know, a nice way. Yaakov is very straightforward over here, okay? Pasuk Lamed Beis, verse 32. Imah, then he responds to the second accusation. Im asher timtzes Elohecha, whoever you find your gods with, lo yichya, he will not live. Neged achenu, in front of our brothers, haker lecha ma'imadi, go and investigate what is with us. Again, that word ach is mentioned again in this section. Okay, so again, Yaakov is unaware of the fact that his wife stole the idols, and therefore he says, whoever has the idols should be killed by God or by man, whatever. He basically curses the person who stole the idols. The kachlan, you could take it. V'lo yada Yaakov, again, Yaakov did not know, ki Rachel gnavasam, that Rachel, Rachel, had stolen those idols. V'yava lovan, well, let's read the next few verses quickly. Okay, you know, let's skip all the way to verse 44, Pasuk Mem Dalet. Basically, Lavan goes on a search, he's unsuccessful. So verse 44 of Pasuk Mem Dalet, after Yaakov and Lavan decide they're going to part ways, listen, this is the words of Lavan. Lavan says, Ve'ata and now, Lecha nechresa vris ani va'ata. Let's make a covenant, a peace treaty, you and I. Vayala aid beini uveinecha, it'll be a testimony between us. Vayikach, now does Yaakov respond to this statement? Look at the next verse. Does Yaakov respond? He does not even respond verbally to Lavan's request. Lavan says, let's be companions, let's be allies, let's make a treaty between us. Right? That's his request. Again, I'm going to read that verse again. It's very important. Verse 44. It's a verse that most skip over. 44, Mem Dalet. Ve'ata, Lavan says, and now, Lecha nechres avris, let's make a covenant. What is a covenant? A covenant is more than just a peace treaty. A covenant is saying, we have a relationship, right? It's not just an agreement of, we're not going to attack one another. A covenant is basically saying, we're partners. Like, we have a covenant with God, right? We have a covenant, right? That's what a covenant is. A covenant is something very, very significant. And Lavan is pursuing a relationship over here. He's telling Yaakov, let's make a covenant that we will be at peace, not just, again, at peace that we won't attack one another. We're going to really have a relationship. Yaakov does not respond to him. Yaakov doesn't say, okay, no, okay. He says nothing. He doesn't say anything. What he does do is, Vayikach Yaakov Aven, he takes a stone. Vayirmeha Matzev, and he makes a monument. Verse 46. Vayomer Yaakov Le'echav, and Yaakov turns to his brothers. Once again, the word brothers, but Yaakov turns to his brothers. Liktu Avanim, he tells them, gather stones. His brothers, the commentators say, is a reference to his children, actually. He doesn't have brothers that he's traveling with, right? But he refers to his children as his brothers. He says, gather stones. Vayikku Avanim, Vayasu Gal, they gather stones, they make a pile. Vayochlu Sham Alagal, and they eat on that pile. Okay? Now, does Yaakov agree to making a covenant? Not really, right? He kind of almost ignores it, right? He says, okay, he doesn't respond, doesn't say, okay. He takes stones, he builds them, he doesn't even acknowledge Lavan. He turns to his brothers, he doesn't say, Lavan, let's build this monument together. He turns to his family, who, by the way, he refers to as brothers, and he says, let's build this monument together. But there's no acknowledgement of Lavan, no acknowledgement to his request for a covenant, and no acknowledgement of building together. Instead, this is completely made, it's unilateral, it's completely made by Yaakov. Okay, Vayikra lo Lavan, Yigar Sahadusa. Lavan now gives a name to this monument, and he calls it Yigar Sahadusa, which means that it should be a testimony. Sahadusa is from the word test. This thing will be acting as a testimony to whatever it is we agreed upon. V'Yaakov kara lo Galed. And Yaakov calls it Gal'ed, which is a Hebrew terminology. Now, what's that all about? That Lavan calls it, they're basically saying the same thing. Lavan's speaking in Aramaic, Yaakov is speaking in Hebrew. But what does this sound like? Okay, is this just simply, okay, I'm speaking, though it's the English and it's the Spanish underneath. Okay, it's the Hebrew and the Arabic. Like, what's going on over here? What sounds like is going on over here? Lavan calls it one thing, and then Yaakov calls it another thing. Is this just a matter of, like, translating for us? Or something else happening over here? Is this strange to you? In other words, normally you don't find this, right? First of all, if there is an agreed upon agreement, if there is a covenant over here, the most basic thing you'd want them to agree upon is, what's the name of the covenant? They don't even agree about that, right? They have this stone, this collection of stones, which represents something. We don't even know what it represents. Yaakov, built by Yaakov on his own with his brothers, Laban calls it something, and then Yaakov says, I'm calling it something else. This sounds like almost like, you know, you can almost imagine like this almost caricature of like an old couple that they disagree about everything, right? I love you. No, you don't. Right? Like everything. They're not even, there's nothing that they agree about. This is supposed to be a peace treaty. It's almost like there's almost this, it's like oozing with irony over here. This is supposed to be a treaty about an agreement. Laban calls it one thing and Yaakov calls it something else. It tells us that there is no agreement whatsoever, right? It's an agreement which has no agreement. You're with me? In other words, Laban calls it one thing, and Yaakov says, no, I'm calling it something else. Richard speaks to everything we're reading in this section. There is an anti-connection between Yaakov and Laban over here. Every attempt Laban has to bring them together is being rebuffed entirely by Yaakov. Okay, let's keep on reading, right? You're with me? Does that analysis sound fair? Yeah. Vayomer Laban. Now Laban says, again, unilaterally on his own. Hagal hazeh eid beni uvencha hayom. This stone is a witness, testimony between you and I today. Akein karashmo galed, and therefore they called it galed. Okay? And what is it? What does it represent? This again, all Laban speaking. The mitzvah sher amar, and this overlook, which we said about, yitzaf Hashem beini uvencha, kinisatzer ish meirah, it should overlook, it's as if God should look at both of us when we no longer see each other. Imtana es benosai, if you negatively afflict my daughters, Vimtikach nashim al benosai, or if you take more wives than my daughters, you bring other wives on, ein ishimanu, then we have no relationship anymore. Ein ishimanu means that there is now nothing between us. Re'e Elokim eid beinu veinecha, God should be a witness between you and I. Okay, so first of all, let's see what happens over here. Initially, Laban said, let's make a bris. A covenant is a mutual loving agreement. Again, God makes a covenant with Avraham. You do this, I do that. Mutuality, a bris. When we have a bris, the circumcision reflects this covenant, this loving, mutual relationship. Laban wanted to make a bris. Was he rebuffed? When we read this superficially, it sounds like Yaakov agrees. But reading this critically, it sounds like Yaakov is not really agreeing. Okay? He doesn't acknowledge it. He builds some form of a testimony, the stone, which is supposed to represent something. Yaakov doesn't even define what it represents. Laban then starts giving a speech. Do we find, and what's the speech? It's no longer about a covenant. This is about like the lowest level of a treaty. It's like a ceasefire almost, right? Now he's moved away from saying that we're friends. Now he's saying, don't harm my daughters. That's where he leaves it, right? It's been demoted from this mutual, level of equal trade and equal love. And now basically it's like, if you harm my daughters, I'll kill you, right? That's basically where he just dropped down like significant. Why? Because Yaakov is not on board. Does Yaakov even agree to this? He doesn't respond. It's unbelievable. Laban keeps on talking and Yaakov keeps on ignoring him. There's no agreement. Look at verse Nun Aleph. Vayomer Laban LeYaakov. And now Laban again speaks to Yaakov. Where's Yaakov's not responding to him. Yaakov's almost like, just completely ignoring him. Ve'yomer Laban LeYaakov, Laban says to Yaakov, Hine hagal hazeh. Behold, there's this pile. V'nei amatzeva she'arisi b'nei v'necha. And there is this monument which I set up between us. Eid hagal hazeh ve'eid amatzeva. It almost sounds like there was two separate monuments. If you read this critically, it sounds like Laban built one monument. Yaakov built his own monument. Okay? Imani lo ever elecha sagal hazeh. And now he says, okay, almost like there's like a new agreement. I'm not going to walk past this pile of stones. And you won't cross this border your way. Okay, what does this now sound like? He's not even expecting Yaakov to necessarily treat his daughters all that well. He's basically saying, okay, there's a border now. Right? They basically now they have an agreed upon border between them. Okay, it went, do you see just what we just read carefully? It went from a covenant to a mutual agreement not to harm the wives in any way of Laban, okay, which also seemed to be rebuffed, to now Laban seemingly having a matzeva and a gal, two separate monuments, and what now they're doing is they're delineating a border. This is basically the most basic level of, insurance that we're not going to fight one another. I'm not going to cross this line. You don't cross that line. We're going to go our own separate ways. Right? It went from a covenant to basically a very clear delineation between Yaakov and Laban. Again, had we not read this carefully, I just I overemphasize this point, but it's so important. Had we not read this carefully, we would have missed all that little give and take or lack of give and take in those verses. But we still haven't analyzed yet. Let's conclude what's happening over here. Elokei Avram, verse 53. Elokei Avram, the God of Avram. Elokei Nachar, and the God of Nachar. Yishbetu veinenu, they should judge between us. Elokei Avihem, the God of our fathers. Okay, so this is Lavan speaking. He's saying the God of Avram and the God of Nachar. Nachar is Lavan's father. Avram is Yaakov's grandfather. Okay? How does Yaakov respond? Vayishava Yaakov. Yaakov swore b'fachad aviv Yitzchak, only invoking the dread of Yitzchak. Once again, do you see what just happened again? Lavan is trying to be very politically correct, right? What's the word? You invoke all the different faiths. Lavan is saying, well, we're going to invoke my God, the God of my fathers, and the God of your fathers. And Yitzchak and Yaakov says, no, we're only invoking my God, the God of my father. I have nothing to do with you, right? This is like, in Yiddish, it's a shtach. You know, it's a shtach. Over and over again, he's basically just like, I have nothing to do with you, nothing. And Lavan is trying to his, I guess, credit, right? And Yaakov is rebuffing him over and over and over again at every turn. Vayizbach Yaakov zevach bahar, and Yaakov then goes and sacrifices. Vayikra le'achav, and he calls his brothers. He doesn't invite Lavan. He calls his brothers, lecho lechem, to eat with him. Vayoku lechem ve'elinu bahar, and they eat. And they sleep, right? So again, there is now this implicit distancing from Lavan. After they have this agreement, Yaakov now says, fine, I was saved. I'm going to bring an offering. He brings an offering. And normally, what do you do when you have an offering? You invite everyone there, right? You ever read these like ancient, you know, in the early years of the United States, you read the different dignitaries going to try to make these peace deals with the different Indian Native American tribes, right? You know, there's all the politics of the intra-fighting over there, and everyone tried making alliances with different Native American groups. And so you read their historical accounts of they come to these places, and they come, and they bring offerings together, and they celebrate through the night, and they smoke their whatever it was they were smoking, and they eat together, right? That's by eating together, it brings us together. Yaakov over here, once again, he has food, but he only calls his companions and not Lavan. Okay? Fine. And again, we saw the word ach, if you were counting, listed 7 times in this section. Okay? So far we already saw a lot of similarities and some similarities. Let's keep read one more verse. Vayashkim Lavan baboker. Lavan wakes up in the morning. Vayinashik Levanav Levnosav. He kisses his sons, meaning his grandsons and his daughters. No kiss to who? To who? To Yaakov, right? There's a clear omission. He has no relationship with Yaakov, okay? Vayelech vayashav Lavan lekomo, and he went back to his place. Pasuk beis vayal Yaakov halach ledarko. Yaakov went on his way. Vayifkeu vo malachei Elokim, and angels of God encountered him. Remember that word vayifga? We saw that all the way when? In the beginning of the Torah portion. And once again, we have angels appearing at the end of the Torah portion. Okay, Vayomer Yaakov Kasher Am, and when Yaakov saw them, he said, "Machne Elokim say." He said, "It's a camp of God." Vayikra Shem Amakom Ahu Machnayim, and therefore he called the place Machnayim. Okay, so yeah, yes, Estelle.
I think it's hard on the daughters. Do they go to the father or they go to their husband?
Yeah, that is a very, very fair point. I'm sure it was not easy. But if you read carefully, if you saw earlier a section we didn't read together, it seems like Lavan mistreated his daughters so significantly that they were fully on board with leaving their father and wanted to have nothing to do with him. Okay. So let's now try to pull everything we saw together. Okay? Let's first begin by focusing on, help me out over here. What are the parallels between the beginning of the Parsha and the end? Again, the bookends, right? The beginning of the Parsha and the end. What parallels have we seen? I've been talking nonstop. Come on, help me out here.
They're not a brother anymore.
Good. Okay. So the most interesting one to me, right? So one is that in the beginning of the Torah portion, they both have an excessive use of the word ach, brotherhood, which means connection, right? In the beginning of the Parsha, that connection highlights a connection which both Yaakov and Lavan are highlighting about their relationship with one another, right? And in the end of the Parsha, the ach is used almost as a way of ironically demonstrating Yaakov's lack of connection to Lavan. As we demonstrated from the read, there is a hateful relationship. Yaakov wants to have nothing to do with Lavan. Parsha begins with ach highlighting closeness between the two of them, and it ends with highlighting the distance between them. Excellent. What other parallels do we have? the angels, right? In the beginning of the Torah portion, Yaakov is sleeping and he sees angels. At the end of the Torah portion, as he's traveling, he sees angels. Good. We also saw that term, vayifka. There is an encounter. There's another one that I could think of. Any other ones that come to mind? It's a little more subtle, this one. How does Yaakov go to sleep? What does he do before he goes to sleep?
Gather stones.
Gather stones. What does the end of the Torah portion tell us? He gathered stones, right? At the end of the Torah portion, there's this gathering of stones, right? It's almost like you have these two pictures, right? And beginning and end of the parsha, there's a lot of they're very similar, right? In terms of externalities, there are angels in both. There are piles of stones in both. Yaakov is transitioning between the countries, one on the way in, one on the way out, right? On both, right? But there is a major distinction, that's the one that Stel pointed out to us, and that is brotherhood to Lavan in the beginning, as opposed to animosity and distance from Lavan at the end. And what perhaps the Torah is trying to do, again, this is so subtle, right? But usually if we're lucky, we study the Torah, we read the Torah portion. If we're really lucky and we're really good, we study it carefully. But how often do we sit there and start to analyze the big picture from beginning to end, look at it, bracket it in and see the beginning to end? What we're watching, what we're witnessing is clearly a demonstrable transition and a change in who Yaakov is. You know, we think of one of the themes that I like to come upon a lot in the context of our forefathers is their greatness is not that they were born with greatness, is that they developed, they changed, right? Yaakov, in some ways, right, is in some ways a deceptive person. He is. There is some deception around him, right? He takes advantage of his brother Esav when he's very hungry and he kind of forces him to sell the firstborn. Right? And then he goes ahead and he steals the blessings, even though he was justified, and we talked about that last week, but he steals the blessings from Esav, even though Yitzchak wanted to give them to Esav. And then with Lavan, we find, and again, we glossed over some of this, for a good part of his time there, he is kind of manipulating the wages that he's going to get. So there is some deception that revolves around Yaakov, but that's not the end of Yaakov. People say, hey, isn't Yaakov supposed to be so full of integrity and honesty? Yeah, yeah, we'll get there, right? Slow down. Because at the end, before, as Yaakov is getting ready to leave, there is a major shift in who he is. He transitions, he develops from being a person who perhaps was justified in all of his actions, but it was done underhanded, right? He's justified in taking the firstborn from Esav. Esav is a bad person. He's justified in stealing the blessings. Yitzchak was making a mistake. He's justified in trying to get his wages from Levin in this backhanded fashion. Levin was an evil person, but it's still underhanded. And what we're going to see and start seeing over here is Yaakov becomes the Ish Emes. He grows in his personal reality, who he is. He becomes a different person. Yaakov becomes a man of truth. Where do we see that? The first time we see that is when Yaakov encounters Lavan. Now, as we highlighted, he's very straightforward with him, right? And we glossed over some of the passages. Yaakov starts yelling at Lavan. I'm sorry, I should have read this together. I apologize. He says, Lavan. He says, you know why? We saw this. We saw it together. He said, I ran because I thought you were going to kill me. But you know what else, Lavan? You've cheated me over and over again. He's now a man of ready to confront. He's ready to be straightforward. And instead, and we'll focus on this next week, God willing. And instead of running from Esav, he's now ready to embrace and encounter Esav, right? And Yaakov throughout, and we'll see this. We'll see some of these stories. We'll see together. Some we won't. But Yaakov, you could hold this, see if I'm incorrect, will not utter a single white lie again. I'll give you the greatest proof of this. There is an episode in next week's Torah portion where it is completely justified to lie. Anyone know what it is? His daughter Dina is abducted. She is raped. She is kidnapped. Do you have every justification in the world to lie and cheat and do whatever you can to bring this woman back? Of course you can. What wouldn't we do for our daughter? And what would we not be justified for doing for a daughter? But what's so interesting is that the family devises a scheme, and according to most of our commentators, everyone is in on that scheme, but Yaakov does not speak. Yaakov is silent. When the scheme is hatched, that they're going to cause everyone to get circumcised, this and that, you know who speaks? The brothers. Yaakov is silent. There is not an untruth that comes out of Yaakov's mouth. You know, even at the end of his life, when he encounters Paro, the most powerful person in the region, you'll read it then, he speaks candidly. He doesn't speak with false deference. He speaks with incredible integrity and truth and strength because Yaakov becomes a man of truth. What we're witnessing between the beginning of the Parsha to the end of the Parsha is the transition of Yaakov from being a deceptive person, again, justified but deceptive, to being a person of absolute truth. And the proof to the fact that there is a development is, okay, so we saw, and again, there are two proofs. One is, ach, beginning of the Parsha, brotherhood at the end of the Parsha, because in the beginning, he is equated, he is seen as connected to Lavan, he is a brother with Lavan in his Rama'ut, in his trickery. But at the end of the Parsha, he pushes and pushes and pushes away from Lavan and demonstrates that his brotherhood has nothing to do with Lavan, right? So the highlighting of brotherhood in the beginning and the end helps us recognize how initially he felt a certain connection and kinship to Lavan, and at the end there is distance. Another amazing proof to this is that it's not just in terms of his actions, but also in the way in his spiritual growth. Because in the beginning of the Torah portion, when does he see angels? In what context?
In a dream.
As he grows, as he develops, when he encounters angels now, you know what happens? He sees them while he's awake. And to be able to experience that level of prophecy, where you're able to see, it's one thing to see it in a dream when you're in this semi-conscious state. That's the lowest level of prophecy we're taught, right? But to see an angel when you're awake, and so much, right? To see an angel when you're awake and to interact with those angels while you're awake, that means you're in a much, 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 much higher state. And so what these bookends of the Torah portion have done, by zooming in on the two bookends, we've witnessed the transition of Yaakov. Of Yaakov is transformed from a person who was tricky and was a brother with Lavan to a person who wants nothing to do with Lavan, who creates a border and defends himself away from having any relationship with Lavan because Lavan is deceptive. And now Yaakov has no deception to him whatsoever. And that is reflected in his relationship with God. He was always a spiritual man. He has a vision of seeing God in this dream of the angels. We should be merits to have such visions, right? Of course, that is an incredible. But he has grown over the course of the Torah portion that now he is ready for a vision that's not only seeing angels while he sleeps, but now he interacts with them as if he is just a one-on-one, as if he's an equal to those angels because Yaakov has grown and changed and developed in the course of this transition. Okay, so I think it's, again, this is not many of these, some of these ideas are my own, but many of them are from Rav Chanoch Waxman. But it just is an amazing opportunity to just zoom in to appreciate the notion of bookends. Whenever you find a narrative, it's always important to see how does the story begin? How does the story end? And to think about the transitions that took place in between and why and how. Okay, there are many stories where that takes place. There's so many. But also to always look out for, and this is where having the Hebrew is helpful, looking for leitmotifs, looking for words that are mentioned over and over again. The Torah is God, the author of the Torah, is trying to draw our attention to that word. That word plays a significant role. In this section, it's pulling on us to tell us the notion of who Yaakov associates with changes dramatically from beginning of the Parsha to the end of it. We are watching, witnessing Yaakov become the Ish Emes, become the man of truth. And again, on a personal level, on a practical level, it teaches us, you know, Yaakov's not a young man over here, but the ability to really change ourselves, despite our age, no matter how old we are, no matter what we've been through before, it's in our hands. We have the ability to make these dramatic changes in our own lives, despite whatever we've been through, just like our forefather, Yaakov.